Hey, Knicks fans, welcome to episode 43 of the Worldwide Knicks Podcast. Light crew this Sunday. Omar here with Alex alone. Rafa is unable to join us today, unfortunately. So, and I was really looking forward to Alex. You know, he was really mad about the Atlanta game, you know, and you and I feel like we were trying to calm him down and to no avail. Well, how are you doing today, Alex?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, once Rafa's off, then it's hard to stop him, you know. So sometimes I just sit back and get the popcorn out and
Enjoy the
enjoy it.
show,
So
right? Yeah. Enjoy the show.
So but missing him here, man. So
Yeah, of
hopefully he's
course.
back next week.
Yeah, of course. Of course, you know, it's not the same without the full strength, to be honest. You know, it's still fun, but not as fun as when all three of us are here. So kind of just queuing up what the week was. Alex, great call by you last week on the record. Alex correctly predicted the team going 1-3. Whereas me and Rafa were foolishly optimistic and went 2-2. So, Knicks end up beating the undermanned Philadelphia 76ers on Friday night without Embiid or Harden playing, and drop games against Cleveland, Atlanta, and Boston last night, which was a 3-point barrage by the Celtics. Quite frankly, 3-point barrage by the Cavaliers, and a lot of 3-point barrages happen against this team, it seems like. But so we're gonna jump right into our key takeaways. Alex has a lot. Like mine, I feel like is pretty simple, but Alex's takeaway is like layered. So I'm gonna just let you go right into it, man.
Well, I'll try and keep it short because I feel like I go over the same point every single week. Probably not going to be a huge surprise that it's about the head coach. I mean, I've said this so many times that firing Tibbs is not some kind of magical solution. Do you know, like if we bring in an unknown coach like Johnny Bryant, for instance, you know, he'll have the same roster. Do we think he's going to bench Randle? Do we think he's going to bench Mitch or not play Hartenstein so they can get Obi and Randle playing together? Why do we think Randle and Obi are going to work? Is it just because they're both good players and we just need to get them on the court somehow? You know, up against top level talent. I mean, we saw a bit of it this week. Some of it worked, some of it looked horrible, you know, and put Randle and Obi up against, you know, like Giannis or Embiid or somebody like that, they're going to get absolutely destroyed. You know, like it's not just a simple case of throwing them out there. But what would Knicks fans do if Johnny Bryant came in and effectively nothing changed, you know, and there's no style change, no play change, no more adjustments? What if he can't manage the New York spotlight? There's very little information about Johnny Bryant. Yes, we know that he can, you know, he's got the respect of a lot of young players around the league. You know, that doesn't mean he can handle the New York spotlight as a head coach. That is many, many experienced great coaches have come and gone and been absolutely fried under the New York spotlight. So what makes us think that he's going to come in and be this, you know, superstar next coach? I think some people see, you know, young coaches being given a chance around the league. You know, a lot of the Popovich's, you know, people have worked under Popovich have gone on and, you know, done great things and think. But again, there's plenty of other young coaches that have come in and done nothing. We thought Fizdale was the magic answer. Do you know that? You know, he was respected around the league. LeBron thought he was great. You know, all this kind of stuff and excited. You know, had this young coach and new ideas, and he was an absolute disaster. Do you know? Do we want to go back there? I know it's a risk, but you know, none of these things are a given. And for anybody that just says fire Tibbs and offers no alternative, I've talked about the fact that I watched Monty Williams one time when the Knicks were playing the Suns, and you know, he made so many kind of similar errors to what people absolutely grill Tibbs for. But he just doesn't get. Maybe it's just the fact that he's a Phoenix coach rather than a New York coach, but things just don't get microanalyzed in the same way. But I challenge anybody to watch like a full game of, say, the Spurs under Pop or Miami under Spo or, you know, the Suns under Monty Williams and see if you can see if they play the perfect game. You know, they don't make mistakes on rotations and line out of bounds play. And, do you know, it's absolutely maddening the way that people just, oh no, we've got to fire Tibbs. You know, like he gave the, you know, somebody gave the ball away off an out of bounds play. Do you know, that's absolutely disaster. You know, you know, well, maybe the other coach made a great, you know, second guessed him and made a great defensive read or something like that. You know, being a head coach is incredibly difficult. I don't think it's fair at all that some of the things that people say about him, and when people just have hashtag fire Tibbs, you know, and it's just like, well, what next? You know, you've got to come up with some kind of alternative. You've got to be better than that. It's very easy to say these things, but then, you know, 6 months down the line when it's all gone to shit, and you know, like, well, maybe we should have thought about this a little bit more. You know, and that's back to the old ways of the Knicks. You know, there's got to be more long-term thinking. There's got to be not jump all over the team after six, seven games when, you know, some results have not gone their way. I mean, they've lost against some of the top teams in the league, and people are jumping all over them saying we've got to fire the coach. Do you know, it just makes absolutely no sense to me at all. So, but in saying all that, last night, obviously last night was infuriating. Okay, I'm not, and you know, we sh you know, he, as I say, there were so many things that were so wrong. I mean, obviously the 3-point defense was awful at times. It was as much to do with there was a lot of miscommunication going on, people missing switches and just leaving players wide open. It was just maddening. Tibbs has to make adjustments there. You know, for two main reasons, really. I mean, the Celtics were clearly shooting kind of lights out from three. They didn't have a poor shooter on the floor. Also, Williams was out, and they had, you know, next to
No
no kind of
Horford either.
post threat. Yeah, Horford as well. They had next to no post threat. So Tibbs has got to make an adjustment. We know his scheme is protect the paint at all costs, and if you're leaving somebody open on the perimeter, then it's got to be a poor to, you know, one of the poorer shooters. And that scheme does work a lot of the time. I mean, the next 3-point defense was right up the top of the league for most of the season. I know it's only, you know, seven, eight games, but you know, the game against the Cavs and the game against the Celtics obviously went totally wrong. But in the most part, that scheme can work. But Tibbs does need a plan B. You know, he's got to be better than that. He's got to see this isn't working tonight. You know, there's no reason that I need to camp out in the paint and protect the basket when, you know, all the players are on the perimeter just, you know, shooting lights out. You know, he's got to have a plan B, but he's got to run a kind of more dynamic scheme in that way. But you know, it's one or two games where it has gone wrong from that respect. And for me, that's not a firing offence. That's just, you know, roll it on to the next one, get it right the next time, make adjustments and move on. You know, not every team's going to come in shooting that kind of crazy percentages. So
All right, so there's a lot to unpack there, Alex.
sorry, man. I did tell he was going to go on for a while.
the whole we're going to talk a little bit about fan overreactions later on. Can we just like take a beat here and realize like we aren't even 10 games into the season yet? The NBA season is a marathon, not a sprint.
And sorry, you could even say that the regular season in the whole to a lot of teams doesn't even really matter. They're coasting. Do you know, it's just like, come on, it's, you know, it's all about getting to the playoffs at the end of the day, you know.
And at the end of the day, this is a team that does not have the top end talent of the teams we played, to be honest. Like, you look at Cleveland with Donovan Mitchell and obviously Garland when he's active. He wasn't playing when we played them. Atlanta with Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. Philly when they're right with Harden and Embiid. And Boston with Tatum and Brown. These are top level talents that we just simply do not
Bucks, yeah.
have. And so when you're the Knicks, you kind of have to play with toughness, win with defense, win with execution. When you're starting to talk about, oh, well, we should be better than this, like, should we really? Like, are we really that team? I don't think so. When you look at the 3-point defense, at the end of the day, Tibbs is playing analytics. You know, he's just like, look at, and people always kind of make jokes like, oh, so what scrub is going to torch the Knicks tonight? Like, I remember that Denver game last year with Zeke Nnaji, who, you know, was hitting like everything against Boston. This Hauser guy was hitting everything. And that's like by design. You give up a couple of those open looks to, you know, role players are relatively insignificant. And you're going to give up, so you're going to have nights where they're just shooting the lights out, because this, after all, is the NBA. But the whole thing to go into fire the coach, fire the coach, fire the coach, that's what dysfunctional teams do. That's what dysfunctional organizations do. Now, we just saw the first coach get fired this year in Steve Nash in Brooklyn. Do you want to be that? You know, you want to be... Now, I'm not saying Steve Nash is a great coach by any stretch of the imagination, but do you want that circus that's in Brooklyn right now? It's just like...
That's old Knicks, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some stability there, you know, and you don't want to just get rid of a coach because you've lost a few games against playoff teams. Like, let's be realistic. And we're going to talk a little bit later about Knicks fans and their unfair expectations and the way they critique everybody that is in and around this team. But, and the crazy thing was, is like, you already knew when DeJounte Murray was having a great game and when Donovan Mitchell was having a great game that it was going to be about, oh, see, we could have had that guy. And it's always like thinking in the past. And they're looking at Tibbs, and it's just about validating the opinion, right? It's like, well, I said that Tibbs is no good and I didn't like the hire 3 years ago, so I'm going to stick to my guns. And every time they lose a game, it's on the coach. We got to fire the coach. And to your point, who we're replacing him with? Like, give me a plan. You know, give me a plan of how you're going to move this team forward. Now, I think the fact that the team comes out flat in the third quarter a lot of the times is a problem. You know, and part of that problem is on coaching, I think. The three-point defense not making adjustments, that's a problem. He has gotten better with mixing up his rotations this year. So, you know, not all is doom and gloom here. But I just still feel like if you – like, who's the coach you're going after, I guess, that's going to be available? Is there somebody in college that you think could translate to the – are you going to bring Jay Wright out of retirement? Are you going to target an assistant within one of these other organizations? Is there a coach that's about to get fired that maybe you want to go after another veteran coach? Like, give me a plan. And if you just say, oh, just hand the reins over to Johnny Bryant, for what? So that you can just criticize him like you're criticizing Tibbs? I mean, that's the thing.
Every time somebody mentions Johnny Bryant, I say, well, what do you actually know about Johnny Bryant? Mm-hmm. And they always come back with the same thing. Or he's respected around the league. And you're like, yeah, no, but what's his defensive schemes? Is he, you know, a good offensive coach? Is he a good defensive coach? What's, you know, what kind of style does he like to play? Is he a 3-point, you know, shooting coach? Is they've got nothing. Nobody knows anything about him other than he's a well-respected coach around the league.
Like, if it, it was when Woodson was still here as an assistant, and they say fire Tibbs, promote Woody, he's a known quantity in this league. We know what Mike Woodson is. We don't know what Johnny Bryant is as a head coach. So, and when this team clearly wants to make the playoffs, clearly wants to win some games, you want a coach that could get you there. And for all of his warts and all of his flaws, Tibbs is a coach that can get you to the playoffs. He has a track record of getting teams, if not to the playoffs, very close to it and to being in the mix there.
Also, the other word that's often mentioned with Tibbs is stubbornness. Mm-hmm. And see, to be honest, stubbornness is actually a good thing, I think, in New York, because, see, I think coaches can get chewed up and spat out in New York, you know, because they can't just stand up for it, you know, and say, this is what I believe is right. You know, they're not bowing to pressure from the media or the fans or whatever. It takes a lot to do that. Do you know, and a young coach coming in here can just be, you know, a kind of rabbit in the headlights sort of thing and just fold. So don't just think some young coach out the college game can just stroll in here and be a big success. You know, it's different than some other places where you can go in and just kind of know that you can lose a few games and everything, you know, you'll get that like, run.
Perfect example of that is Orlando. You could go to Jamal Mosley, the assistant from Dallas, who's now in his second year coaching the Magic. He could go in there and learn on the job. You know, that's okay because – no disrespect to the Orlando media, but it's not the pressure cooker that New York City is. And you have to have somebody, to your point, that knows how to handle the city. If he doesn't know how to handle, or he or she doesn't know how to handle the city, then they're ultimately going to fail at this job because it's a lot. You know, you have the press down your throat. You have the specter of Dolan, you know, if he decides to, he wants to meddle into the goings on of the day-to-day operations. You have this fan base that is incredibly passionate, but a lot of times misguided and just overly emotional. Every loss is the end of the world, you know, and that's a lot to deal with. Like in Oklahoma City, they could deal with a few losses because they know what they are. You know, here we have like delusions of grandeur, and we kind of want to be like looked at as this elite franchise when from a talent perspective, we're just not that right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so my takeaway this week, a lot more black and white, I guess. So Mitchell Robinson got hurt the other night against Philly, and, you know, it looks like he has some knee soreness, could be out for a couple of weeks. I guess they're going to reevaluate him in about 10 days. So obviously this opened the door for Isaiah Hartenstein to get some extra playing time. Also opened the door for more Ubi and Randall combinations that you had alluded to earlier, Alex. But to me, this is a huge loss. Like, you know, I know a lot of people feel however they feel about Mitch, but so far this season, he's been an incredible offensive rebounder. His shot blocking timing has been perfect. He seems like he's building some chemistry there with Jalen Brunson. And, you know, he's really accepted his role on this team as paint enforcer, big time offensive rebounder. And while I feel like Hartenstein gives you a little bit something different than what Mitch offers, what they lose in Mitch is huge, because I feel like Tibbs' defense is predicated around Mitchell Robinson being in the paint. Again, Hartenstein has his skill set. It's not Mitchell Robinson's skill set. They're two different players. And so I wonder how they're going to navigate that. You know, we saw a little bit of Jericho Sims last night against Boston. I wonder if you're going to see more of that as opposed to the Obi Randall pairing. And I'm really honestly conflicted about the whole Obi Randall thing. You know, I understand from a small ball perspective, it makes sense. I know people want Obi to get more time, but he's such a frustrating player, man. Like, you know, last week we were kind of going on about why Obi is just kind of like a good role player, not a star player. And it's like, there's just moments he just disappears. Like, I think in our group chat, like, you had sent a message saying, oh, Obi Toppin's the most frustrating player ever. 20 minutes later, you were saying, I love Obi Toppin because he hit a couple threes, you know? And yeah,
it's obviously like, tongue in cheek. Just
yeah, you know, yeah. It's the, but that's the Obi Toppin experience. Like, he'll disappear for times throughout the game, and then all of a sudden he'll get a dunk on a fast break or hit a corner three, which he's been very good at this year, by the way. But and it's just like, I don't know if that's sustainable long term. I don't like the wear and tear on the body of Randall that would give if you have extended minutes at the five. But even though I know that's what people want. So I think this Mitch injury is a little bit of a bigger deal than people are making it out to be. Yeah, I know it's only 2 weeks, but the way this team is, every game counts, every win is earned. So I guess, what were your thoughts when you saw Mitch go down the other night?
Yeah, I mean, at the start of the season, I said to you both that, you know, Mitch is not my favourite player. And not to say I don't like him at all, but, you know, I don't love the progression that he's had. He's obviously a great shot blocker, that's without doubt. I totally agree about, you know, his timing of his blocks has improved a lot. He's not fouling as much when he's trying to block. He's a lot better timing with that respect. So, you know, he has worked in certain aspects of his game. His screen setting is still atrocious after, what, 4 years, do you know? And it's really unacceptable for a kind of player that big. His defensive rebounding as well is dreadful. I don't understand how he can grab so many great offensive boards, but his timing for defensive rebounds is terrible.
That's why Emmanuel Quickley's there. Mr. 16 rebounds himself.
But it's not as if he even boxes out particularly that Quickley can come in. You know, he should be going hunting those rebounds. He should be getting well over 10 rebounds a game. you know, even just from the defensive side of things.
Yeah, I think he's only averaging like 2 or 3 defensive rebounds a game right now.
It's insane. Yeah. I mean, it's insane. You know, point guards are getting more defensive rebounds than he is, and it's, I don't know. There's so many parts of his game that kind of frustrate me, and I know that Tibbs loves him, but Tibbs is very set on, you know, as long as you can do, you know, protect the rim at an elite level, then that's kind of good enough for him center-wise. So, but I don't know. I just expect more from him, especially after this time. There was all that nonsense with the weight gain last summer as well. Yeah. You know, he's just a player that constantly frustrates me. You know, the injuries coming in as well, just really, really irritating. So what I do like, I mean, Hartenstein, as we said last week, is kind of all action. Like when he's on the floor, you know he's on the floor at all times. You know, he's involved in absolutely everything, it seems. He's by no means a perfect player. You know, he makes a lot of mistakes.
He's chaotic, man. He's so chaotic. Yeah.
I know. But in some kind of way, it's a little bit like Obi. It's kind of fun to watch sometimes. It's a little bit just it's exhausting to watch at times. But, you know, he has been a good signing, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And we've said many times, you know, compared to, you know, the Noel dynamic where...
Yeah, the versatility very similar he offers skill set versus to, Noel is incredible. Yeah. Yeah.
From, you know, Noel was far too similar to Mitch. And, you know, just having, again, I talked about Plan B earlier, you know, with Hartenstein, you feel like there is a Plan B, you know. Disappointed by his 3-point shooting, though. Although he does take a few shots, his percentage is really low this season. So
he's not even looking to take it. You know, that's what I don't like about it. It's like he'll get the looks in the corner and he'll just pass it up, not even looking at the basket. You know, Clyde points it out all the time, you know. Yeah. And, so that's something I'd like to see more of from him.
Yeah, definitely. So, but just on Sims is, Jim Sims has looked pretty poor as well, like every time he's come in. But, you know, I'd hoped for a little bit more from him, but it's obviously very small sample size.
Still so raw, honestly. Yeah. Like, I think I wouldn't be surprised if he got a little bit of time in the G League at some point again this year. Him and McBride, just to refine a little bit more. You know, be ready if another injury happens. On that note, let's move on to another young player, Cam Reddish, who I have to apologize, man. I was really down on him in the preseason, I think more so than you guys were. And I just was really questioning the decision-making. But he's really emerged. You know, got into the starting lineup last night, played about 40 minutes. Obviously, the absence of Quentin Grimes there, the relegation of Evan Fournier to the bench. And so my thoughts on this was, the thing I love about the way Cam is playing right now is there was always questions about his effort. You know, how much does he want it? You know, like RJ wants it. Like you see RJ on the bench when, you know, when things aren't going his way, he's mad. He really wants to get after it. And everybody kind of wondered if Cam had that same instinct in him, right? I look at him this season so far. Defensively, he's so active. He's getting into the passing lanes. He's taking the responsibility of guarding a tough assignment. Like, he was on Tatum a lot yesterday. And I just love what I'm seeing from him. Yes, there are a few shot selection things that, you know, make you wonder, head scratchers, but let's be honest, guys. Like, we have Julius Randle on our team. He makes a lot of suspect decisions. We have RJ Barrett on our team. He makes some suspect decisions, right? I don't know, man. I really like what I'm seeing from Cam. I also almost wonder now if Fournier is kind of becoming more and more expendable, because he's not really getting that many minutes, even coming off the bench unit. Hasn't really had an impact. When Grimes gets back fully healthy, you kind of wonder, is he kind of the odd man out with how well... Because you look at Reddish, and if there was, like, the way he's playing right now, that's like a Tibbs blueprint right there. Long, athletic wing, active defender, could hit the corner three, could drive it inside when need be. I mean, that's kind of Tibbs' wet dream, if we're being honest, right? So I guess, what have you thought of Cam over this past week, Alex?
I mean, just going back, I thought I was the most critical out of three of us, to be honest, about Cam. I just didn't see the fuss at all when he signed him. I didn't see, you know, it was more Rafa was, you know, he was the cheerleader for Cam, and I just didn't get it at all. I didn't see any kind of, you know, elite level talent, and I'm always going back to, you know, players living off reputation from high school and college is, you know, it means nothing. Once you're in the NBA, it's a whole different game. You know, how many players have, you know, been these elite players in college or high school, and then just hit the NBA and be total busts. You know, and so once they hit the NBA, it's a, you know, to borrow a Tibbs phrase, it's a clean slate. You know, and so I just didn't see that. I didn't see the heart in them, and you know, you heard from Hawks fans that said exactly the same thing. You know, you get one great game, and then, you know, nine kind of nothing games. Yeah. It's just not good enough. And the rumor is that he was always kind of thinking, you know, I'm the star of the team, you know, and you need to treat me like one. But I have said for the last few weeks that, you know, there is definitely a place for him in this team if he wants it. The backup three position, everybody keeps calling him a two, which I find a bit strange. To me, if he's coming in with RJ, RJ slides to the two. To me, he's best as a small forward, and even covering up for in the power forward spot.
His wingspan makes him the ideal for the three, I think.
Yeah,
because he's so long.
I don't get this two thing. I mean, we've obviously got enough two guards at the moment. So, but yeah, I mean, the spot is there for him. You know, as a backup for RJ mostly, because we don't really have anyone else that can play the three. As long as he kind of, you know, gets a bit more humble, just finds his role, works hard at it. And I love to see it. See when, you know, I saw him coming off the court last night, and, you know, his box score is, you know, nothing to write home about, you know, and he looked absolutely exhausted, but, you know, he'd given everything, you know, and he'd been one of the best players on the team. You know, his box score wasn't saying so, but, and you could see Tibbs, you know, Tibbs was high-fiving him and talking to him, and you could see how engaged he was. I totally agree with you and about, you know, he's Tibbs' kind of perfect player, you know, and, you know, everybody that was saying, you know, Tibbs hated him and didn't want to play him and he's not a Tibbs type player and all that. I could never understand that either. I just think he came into the roster as a tough time, you know, where, you know, we had 10 set players in the rotation, and coming in halfway through a season is never easy. Especially when you're not like a star player, or, you know, a starter player, you're just trying to kind of break the rotation. So, and then he got a couple of injuries as well. And, it, you know, it just never happened to it for him last season.
He got into a bad situation. I mean, we were like all hands on deck trying to figure some shit out, you know, in free fall. And the rotation was kind of already set, and there was just no spot for him.
Yeah.
And that's really the story of last year. And this year, obviously, a different situation, more availability for him to show what he has. You mentioned him slotting in as a backup for RJ. So I guess, do you envision them extending him in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I said to you guys earlier, I mean, if he keeps going the way he is, then there's definitely a spot for him in the team. I guess it would always depend on, you know, what the price is. If he's still got that idea that he's some kind of, you know, superstar player, then, you know, he might price himself out of it, given the extensions that we might have coming up as well. And obviously we've got, you know, three players that are getting paid a lot of money already. So, and obviously I know the cap's going up as well, but that's all got to get taken into account with like Obi and IQ and people like that coming up. So, yeah, I mean, if he can got the right price, and if he continues kind of the way he is, gets a bit more consistent at that level, just cuts out the silly shots, then yeah, there's definitely a place for him in the team. Hopefully, as I mentioned earlier, you know, if the box score stats stay as they are, then, you know, that might put a few teams off around the league that aren't going to, you know, are we really going to pay, you know, a big money for a guy that's giving us 6 points a night, you know, but not quite seeing the benefit of what he gives you. So, yeah, I mean, a long way to go until we have to make that decision. So, but yeah, he's started really well.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about it, you know, and I think from a spot starter, first man off the bench type of role, you know, you could probably get him at pretty good value in this offseason because, you know, like I said, the box score stats, he's not like he's a hot commodity, you know, unless a team is just really desperate. I mean, he is going into unrestricted free agency, so it's kind of the unknown. So I am curious to see.
And with cap going up as well.
Yeah, cap going up as well. So, I mean, do you pay this guy close to 15, 20 million a year? And that's gotta be, you gotta want, makes you wonder. And it also makes you wonder if, if some team, some scout sees something in him, that he's like, wow, I could really, this guy could be a real good third guy on my starting unit. Maybe they lure him away in that way. So I'd love to be able to keep him if he continues on the trajectory, just because he offers so much versatility defensively.
Some yeah, something that we just don't have, I don't think.
I mean, he's a guy who could play three positions, like you don't want him playing extended power forward minutes, but he can do it, when called upon. And obviously the natural three who can also play the two, as you mentioned. And I've been very impressed with him, honestly, Alex. I don't really in the pre he's like a different a whole different player from when it was in the preseason, which shows you how little preseason actually means. But I am curious to see between like with Grimes coming back and then what happens with Fournier. I feel like the team might be kind of washing itself of that summer when they signed Fournier, and Kemba and re-up Burks and Noel and Randle, obviously. Those like Rose has been playing well in limited minutes, and Randle's had a pretty decent start to the year. But everything else, you kind of got to look at that off season as a little bit of a failure, with all those contracts that they handed out to the players from the year before, and Evan Fournier and Kemba Walker. But speaking of point guards, let's talk a little about Jalen Brunson. So Knicks fans are funny, Alex. I think we can agree on that, right? So you made a very good point about this. I think it was I forget it was today or yesterday. But last year when there was Point Randle and ISO Randle and all that, like, ah man, we got to get a real point guard in here to get the ball out of Julius's hands. So what does Leon Rose do for you, Knicks fans? He goes and gets a fucking point guard to take the ball out of Julius's hands, which he has, by the way. Julius is not doing as many ISOs. I know people, anytime a Julius isolation happens, it's the end of the world, but whatever. Not even gonna get into that. But now they're complaining about Jalen Brunson's usage rate. And I was just like, well, he's a point guard. He's supposed to have the ball in his hands. Like, are you all of a sudden mad about that? So I just think it's so funny because I almost feel like Knicks fans want the game to be played in a certain way. And when it doesn't go that way that they envision, then they like you're not going to be the NBA is an isolation one-on-one league. Like, let's be honest here. Some of the most elite players, like Luka, is a heavy usage type of player. And all of a sudden you're mad because Jalen Brunson brought the ball up, drove into the paint, scored some points, and then passed it to RJ or something like that. I just don't understand. Like, are we just complaining to complain at this point? What's your takeaway on that?
Oh, it's absolutely that. I mean, you mentioned about the isolation play. I was going back with Rafa about this this morning. I think it's funny how the isolation thing is become almost a dirty word. You're not allowed to. There's absolutely nothing wrong with being an ISO player or isolation player in the right spots. And the key thing with Randall, he can pass out at the right moment. That's where he became unstuck after his great season 2 years ago. He started to think he was an all NBA player. He was dribbling into kind of double and triple teams. All teams had to do was load up on him, and he got himself he passed out maybe a second, half a second too slow, and defense was all over him. I mean, Randall one on one is one of he's not unguardable, obviously, but he's a big threat. If he's crashing to the basket one on one, if he gets double teamed, he's a really good passer. He just needs to pick the right pass, and we were starting to see that at the start of the year. He was giving up the ball much earlier. He wasn't bringing up the ball for a start. Something a bugbear of mine of Randall over the last few years is where he gets the ball. He shouldn't be bringing the ball up at all. He should be catching the ball higher up, in the post areas and crashing at the basket. That's where he's best. Yeah, if he needs to take a kind of mid-range or whatever. The other problem with Randall, I know I've kind of gone off topic here, talking Randall now, but you know, it was, you know, thinking himself as a three-point threat when he had such a good three-point shot. And so he needs Brunson bringing the ball up court, getting him in the right positions to attack the basket, basically. Starting to see that at the start of the year, I was really excited about that, to say, kind of see Randall back in that kind of mode. And again, just kind of taking some of the weight off his shoulders. And, you know, Brunson's the absolute perfect player for this. Do you know, he's calm, generally makes the right decision. He's a good passer. His assists are way up this year. I know he's not playing with Luka anymore, but his assists are way up, I think, from about three to seven. And, you know, he's scoring, again, at a very efficient rate. You know, that he's came as advertised, you know, and he's one of those players that just, you know what you're getting with him. And that is exactly what we've needed at the point guard position for the last 150 years or whatever it is. Do you know, it's just ridiculous, the criticism that he's getting right now. He can go a bit cold sometimes, but what player doesn't? Do you know, it just drives me absolutely insane. I was like, you've been given this player, you've got him in free agency, we haven't had to give up anything for him, unless we get, you know, for the tapping up thing. But, and he's just got such a great attitude. Do you know, all the players seem to like him. You know, he's a great locker room guy from what you hear. There's absolutely no downside to him as far as I'm concerned, and anybody that's criticising him just needs to take a serious look at themselves. You know, as a fan, you're like, what do you really, really want? You know, we're not going to get, you know, some, you know, Luka Doncic in the door, you know, for that contract and for effectively trading away nothing for him. So just absolutely nonsense, you know, and you'd think people would be a bit more appreciative given the point guards that we've had to endure over the last 10, 20 years.
That's the thing. It's like, what is the player that we want? You know, like, these same people who love Carmelo Anthony, right, are going to be complaining about a Jalen Brunson ISO. It's just like, is it, like, still bitterness from not getting Donovan Mitchell? I mean, I just am not sure what the deal is. Like, you wanted to upgrade a point guard. You got one. Like, yeah, the team is below 500 right now. Sure, okay, we get that. But it's not like it's all doom and gloom. There has been market improvement in the way they're playing. You're not getting Julius ISOs. RJ's usage and touches are not going down in the way that people thought they would. Julius is playing more efficient basketball. And obviously you got a legitimate point guard that teams actually have to game plan around for once. For like the first time in years on this team.
Came unstuck against the Bucks. He's quite poor against the Bucks, but he's up against Drew Holiday, one of the best defensive guards in the league. You know?
One of the best defensive guards.
Exactly. Just, I mean, yeah, get a bit of perspective, that's all.
Like, think about the teams we were losing to here. Boston, Cleveland, Atlanta, Milwaukee. I mean, like, these are great teams with playoff, if not title aspirations in the case of Milwaukee and Boston. And, you know, so it's like, we're just not there. I mean, we don't have the talent yet, and we're not, and we still got to give, it's like when we were having our conversation in the group chat after the Atlanta game, it's like, look, we got to calm down. We're not even 10 games in, you know, and we're all talking about, oh, this guy's cancerous on my team, or we got to fire the coach, or this season's a loss. Like, we're not even 10 games into the season, guys. Like, this is a long regular season that, and they still are getting used to the fact of having this type of a point guard with them on the lineup. Because think about, we'll use Julius as an example. What is Julius used to in terms of the point guard position? He's used to Elfrid Payton. He's used to the ghost of Kemba Walker. And he's used to Alec Burks and a little bit of Emmanuel Quickley. So you get a guy who's actually competent at the position. It's going to take some time. And I know a lot of people are mad about, oh, Julius reverting to old Julius a couple games ago. It's like, yeah, it's going to take time for him to kick the bad habit. You know, it's not like some magic pill that cures overnight. We got to give these guys a little bit of time here, I think.
There's very, very, very few teams around the league, if any, that don't have a kind of star player on their team. You look around, there's not that many kind of real easy games, even though I keep hearing, oh, we're beating the teams that we're supposed to beat. You know, the position we're in, we've got no right to say that about any team particularly. There's maybe one or two.
There's maybe
Yeah, I
three
mean,
or
even you
four,
look at like
like
the Pacers. I've got
Rockets.
Haliburton and Mathurin who are playing great at the minute. Do you know? And it's, yeah, the Rockets maybe and the Spurs and you know even the Spurs have been playing well and you know.
The Jazz are
Yeah,
seven and three,
exactly.
Alex.
I don't know. I think people have just got to realize that you know that in this bizarre world where everybody wants Wembanyama, nobody seems to be tanking. Nobody seems to be bad yet.
Yet.
Yeah.
I think game
Yeah.
30, right, is when you're going
Yeah.
to start seeing. You know, some team will be like, you know, like 16 and 14 or whatever, or 14 and 16. And be like, you know what? Fuck
Yeah.
this. Let's just blow it up, try to get the guy. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. It just feels like the fan base is like so critical of this guy. And I think I really think it goes back to not getting
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell. I think if there was
Yeah.
never a rumor, and say he was traded to Cleveland right after Gobert was traded to Minnesota, that people would be like, oh, whatever, you know, we were never in the running for him anyway, who
Yeah.
cares? And we got Jalen Brunson, maybe it'd be a little bit better. But this fan base, man, I don't know, man. They just seem to be fixated on negativity that, you know, oh, we're never gonna be good. We never got the guy, blah, 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 blah. And I don't know. I guess I don't see it that way. You know, I know people are frustrated. We haven't won here in a million years. You know, we know that.
I was just going to say, I mean, if we'd got Mitchell, there'd be 1,000 fans on Twitter saying what a disaster, we've given up all our players and it's Melo deal all over again. You know,
Yeah, one game, if Mitchell goes 3 for 19, right? They'll be like, oh, I can't believe we got rid of Obi Toppin and Emmanuel quickly for this guy. You know, you can't
well,
win. You know, you can't win with these guys. And that's the crazy thing about it,
yeah.
Alex, to me, is that they're ultimately just never satisfied. And, you know, like we wanted an organic rebuild, and that's
Yep.
what we're getting. And you know what happens with an organic rebuild? Growing
Yep.
pains.
It takes
Like
time.
this is what happens.
Yep.
You know, so I don't know. We'll see how it goes, obviously. But you know, I for one, I'm sure, you know, I speak for you as well here. Very happy that Jalen Brunson is my
Damn
team's
right.
point guard and have no problems with him right now. He looked great against Boston. Honestly, you know, it's funny you were talking about how frustrating the Boston game was earlier. Julius, RJ, Jalen all
Yep.
played well. It's just that Boston set a franchise record for made threes.
You know,
You
it
know, it's
happens.
just like, what are you gonna do? They're making the shots,
Yeah.
they're making the shots. It
Yeah.
is what it is. But let's fast forward to next week. Four games, Alex, to kind of digest. So we got go traveling to Minnesota. Highly doubt you'll be watching that game. I think that's 2:15 a.m. start
Oh,
your
man.
time. And then playing the Nets, Brooklyn Nets, then at the Garden for the Pistons, and then at the Garden for an early game Sunday afternoon against the Thunder. So what you got go for next week of these four games? What are you thinking?
Well, if I'm getting all these predictions right, so I think this time I'm going to go super positive and go 3-1, including
Okay.
the long-awaited win against the Nets. I'm predicting it now. It has to happen eventually, but I think we just let's say
One of
we get
these
all five
times.
players and just circle around Kevin Durant and see what happens after
Let Cam Thomas
yeah,
beat you.
exactly. So.
Yeah, because what's his name? Kyrie will still be
Indeed, yeah.
suspended by then because he has that 5-game suspension for his antics on Twitter and the apology,
No apology,
non-apology since then. Well, what a
yeah.
mess.
I see LeBron's come out and ripped him about it as well, so his old
Yeah,
friend.
I mean, at the end of the day, you can't just be hateful to or like and condone something that is hateful towards a group
Yeah.
of people. And you know, the NBA is a very socially conscious league, I think. You know, I know we hadn't planned to talk about the Kyrie
No.
thing, but you know, just real quick, the NBA is a socially conscious league. You say some shit like that, it's not gonna fly, you know, and he's kind of dancing on the razor's edge, I
Yeah.
think, right now. In turn, because like nobody really wanted to trade for him because he's just such a fucking nightmare, you know, to deal with from a PR perspective, you know,
Well, it's not
and
exactly the first time as well.
yeah, he has a long history of this, you know, and yeah, exactly. It's not like this is the first time offense or whatever. He has had a very long history, like obviously the whole vaccine stuff last season, you know. It's just he just has kind of feels like he has made himself bigger than the game. And that's incredibly unfortunate because I often will say, and I don't know if you agree with this, Alex, he's probably the best ball handling guard I've ever seen, you know, and the what he can do with a basketball in his hands is ridiculous. His layup package at the rim is incredible as well. And
I think only Wembanyama maybe has a better handle than Kyrie.
yeah, he might get a little bit of a better handle. Yeah. So, but for me, I don't know, I'm gonna go 2-2, man. I do think that we can get one from the Nets, but I don't know, man. I feel like we're gonna drop one of the Pistons or the Thunder games. I don't know why. I just feel like one of those games we might not get, and then obviously the Timberwolves game
Yeah,
becomes a
don't
question
like him.
mark.
Although
Yeah, with
Gobert is out at the
Cam
minute, but I
Reddish.
think he's on his way back, I think.
Yeah. So, Timberwolves are an interesting team. I think they could make a make some noise in the
I've not
West
really
this
watched them,
year.
but I've heard that Edwards and D'Lo have not been great. So I don't know if it's quite clicked yet with Gobert.
Again, it's so early in the season. You know, we
That's a
gotta give
big
this team
change.
time.
Big
Like you think
change for
about,
them.
yeah, it's such a wholesale change for them. They lost a lot of young players, and they gained a new center in Gobert. Cat now has kind of a little bit of a different role there, more offensive focused, you know. So it becomes a an interesting situation. But that is going to wrap us up for episode 43 of Worldwide Knicks. Thank you everybody for taking a listen. If you enjoy the pod, please consider subscribing and rating it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you are on Twitter, you can catch us there at WW Knicks Podcast, where we talk about the games and general musings and goings on in Knicks land. So for on behalf of Alex and Rafa from the bench, this is Omar signing off. Hopefully we'll be at full strength next week. And we'll talk to you guys then. Go Knicks.